Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. All right, so today I'm excited to bring back onto the podcast Shannon Connery, PhD. We shared her really powerful story a while back in the podcast, but today she comes on and talks about a really, really important topic that I think a lot of writers and artists and creators can resonate with. And it's how we give away our power to create and share. This comes up in a lot of different ways. It can come up in a lot of narratives and excuses that feel really logical, really reasonable. And I hear this from writers all the time, just of the challenges and struggles that we go through. This idea of, gosh, now is not the right time to share on social media because, or, ugh, I missed my chance to publish my book because of this, or here's a trend, or here's an author, and they've done this thing, and now it means that I've missed my opportunity. Shannon really talks about how we tend to limit our own potential with these narratives, and instead fill our lives with excuses and negativity. So she shares a couple of really powerful stories to illustrate the point, and she digs into the psychology of what is going on, and then she really helps us figure out how to fix it. And of course, I always love her advice, but you know, her advice here is that we have to lead with our goals and lead with our values. This is a really fun conversation, and we really dig into topics I think that so many writers and artists struggle with all the time. All right, here is my conversation with Shannon Connery, PhD. Hey everyone, this is Dan Blank. I'm really excited to be chatting again with Shannon Connery. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so you recorded a podcast and a newsletter and a blog that was about this really powerful topic, and it's something that a lot of writers are, I would say that they typically struggle with, and especially now they're struggling with. And you framed it in this really interesting way, which is the idea of giving away your power. And Yes. The context, as I come to it thinking about the life of a writer, is a lot of things. It's saying, oh, you know, the marketplace is so rife with this type of book that I just have bad luck. Or, you know, no one wants this kind of book. Or, you know, these agents, they're not even acquiring right now. Or things are so crazy, it would be selfish if I started talking about my book. It's all these things that on the one hand feel very, very real. And very logical to say, well, hey, Dan, we can't drive up to the forest right now because there's traffic on the highway. And then there's this other way of saying that is true, but. So can you maybe just take us through a bit, just the concept as you were exploring it this week of what is the whole concept, or even the example you shared of what is the framing of we're giving away our power in this kind of a context?
It's a really important piece for me when I work with private clients in helping somebody to feel more empowered. And you can really apply this concept to anything in your life, any area. So I love that you're bringing it into the world of writing. I was sitting here thinking, gosh, I've never even thought about it in the sense of the world of writing, but it makes so much sense. Specifically, the podcast that I recorded was about feeling like I was giving away my power during this virus. And I am a runner. I love to go running. And so usually every Saturday or Sunday, I go for a long run. And it's healing and it's, you know, spiritual time. I love it. I listen to music. I pound the pavement. I clear my head. I love it. And so I went out a couple Saturdays ago at about 11:30 on a Saturday, and I had my bandana, fully planning on staying 6 feet away from people. And when I get near people, I pull it up and I try to wait, you know, 20 feet before they get to me, 20 feet after, you know, whatever, we're all making up these numbers, but, at least 6 feet, of course. And, got out on the trail and it was totally packed. I think about 10% of people were wearing masks. Lots of people had them around their necks, but were not wearing them. And I started to get really angry, and I could feel myself just thinking thoughts about people, getting just very judgmental and negative and resentful. You know, I'm protecting you. Why aren't you protecting me? It doesn't work if you wear it around your neck. Like, what are people thinking? You're all being so stupid. You know, I just was really getting into this negative space, and it took my energy. I had to turn around much earlier than I had planned, got home, started venting, fuming. And then I had this moment because several years ago, I had to do a lot of work around my own sense of empowerment. And what I know, and it's a habit, is if I start to get in a place of blaming people, if I start to get really angry and putting all my energy on what other people did to affect me, I go, oh, wait a minute, I recognize this. This is me giving my power to all those people on the trail. And so I had to really regroup. And what I did specifically in this case, because it's a bizarre new world, I've told you before, I feel like we are all experiencing a culture shock in a way right now, because we are living in what looks like our world, but it is not our world anymore. And so to take my power back, I had to decide what are my values and what are my goals? How do I want to negotiate with this virus? And then the second step to really feeling empowered is to then align your behavior with what you come up with as your value. So everybody's doing this differently. I've heard people who are like, I don't care, I'm going to get it. But they pretty much almost want it so that it will be over, all the way to total lockdown. And so I came up with a very specific way that I am comfortable negotiating, which is very minimally. I will go outside, but I don't want to be within 6 feet of people. I do always wear a mask to protect other people. And so I don't want to get it. I don't want to give it to anybody, and specifically my kids or my dad. So I decided if I can't run on Saturday at noon because that doesn't fit within my values and my ability to negotiate, then I won't do it. So if I want to go run to be empowered, I need to go at 7 in the morning or 7 at night. And I have to jump off the trail, and I have to not wear music so that if people on bikes come up behind me, I'm not startled and then pissed off. You know, so I really thought very specifically through what had bothered me. And then I took control of every way that that could happen again so that it doesn't. So that was kind of the example that I had used. Yeah. But it applies to everything.
Well, it's really neat because you've done this work, that the triggering mechanism for you to be like, oh, wait a minute, I'm doing it again, was that you felt angry. Like, it wasn't, because we all feel that with lots of things, and you didn't just see it as I'm angry because, I mean, you were doing a little bit of venting, but you're like, wait a minute, if I'm angry, maybe it means I'm doing this thing. And that's kind of neat to think of that as like, it sends off the little red light of like, check yourself or use this mechanism that you have.
No, it's so true. I always think, you know, in psychology, there's funny things about, you know, when people go back to their family of origin, you know, for Christmas, within like 48 hours or 72 hours, everybody is acting like they did, you know, in childhood. And
48 seconds for most families.
So we all have that during stress, during crisis, we will revert back to behavior patterns that aren't as adaptive as maybe our highest work or where we were when we were doing a lot of work. So it doesn't surprise me that everybody is getting angrier and more emotional and more stressed, because this is just a weird, bizarre time.
How does one like kind of normalize those two things? Because I'm thinking of like, you know, marketing for authors. So, I mean, there's a million of these, but I've heard people, I can hear the writer being like, oh gosh, well, I can't do Instagram because like all the people that are successful there, I mean, they're just gorgeous and like I'm not and blah, blah, blah. Or they say, you know, self-publishing, no, I'm not considered that. It's desperate. It's pathetic. Or they say, you know, it's like something like that where to them, it's like the Ira Glass thing. They feel that they have taste. They feel that they have done the research. They feel that this is logical, and they feel that they know themselves. And you know what? They're pretty damn smart. So therefore, and it feels like the biggest challenge in the world to do what you're saying, which is for all of that to hold true. And yet, kind of own that. I'm just trying to see, what is that process in the middle there? What have you learned about that? Because I feel like that is so difficult to know that you are right and you have taste and you're smart and you're good, yet you have to make a different decision about, let's say, running at a different time of day, even though to you, quote unquote, all those people are idiots.
Well, I mean, it's funny that you're saying that, because what I was when you were, as you were speaking and, you know, giving voice to somebody who has all these strong judgments and opinions, like for me, once again, when I'm in that place of judgment, you know, self-publishing is stupid, posting during this time is, I mean, once again, for me, that what you just said would be a trigger, because when we are in that space of judgment and anger, and I mean, you can feel it. It doesn't come from the place that you tap into with people all the time. That doesn't come from a place of creativity. Hmm. That comes from, you know, our kind of ego fear place. And so it makes sense, you know, people have fears. The funny thing about what you just said is that when we have a belief system like that, we will absolutely create it. So if you believe that you can't do anything during this period of time because X, Y, and Z, the virus, no agent's going to look, nobody wants to see a nice picture, you will create that reality. I mean, and so it's the empowerment comes from noting your own limitations, your own judgments, your own fears, and then deciding, is that really what I want to do? Or, you know, am I calling Dan Blank because I want to tap into this place of creativity and possibility? You don't know where everybody else is. I have heard everything. People are doing 10 times more work to I can't work at all. And it depends entirely on whether you're on the front lines of this or whether you have space now. I mean, it just depends on where you are.
Well, where does it blend into excuses? Because it's always easier in life if you have an excuse, which is like, I can't do that because, and it's not just it's logical and reasoning like we just talked about. It's also like, dude, you're off the hook. Now you don't have to do it. It's an excuse. And I mean, I think that one I'd always remember hearing, and because it was right, I started my company in 2010. It was at the bottom of the recession at the time. And I mean, the whole culture for so long before and after that was, but the economy, but the recession. It was like every other word, it seemed like. And I was watching, I watch a lot of YouTube videos from, like, you know, cobblers and landscapers, all these like awesome, like, workers have these YouTube channels. I was watching one, he was doing this really wonderful video. And this is like a month ago, and he brought up, well, you know, it's, yeah, after 08, that recession, things were never the same with my business. And here we are 12 years later. And I was kind of shocked because I really, really like this guy. And I think he's wonderful. And it was interesting to hear him bring that up, especially now amidst a crisis that is much bigger, even more complicated. And it was interesting to me, I'm like, and I don't know the answer, but I was like, is that just the reality? Is it an excuse? Is it something in between? Or can we even say, but how does excuses work into this?
Well, I mean, that's tremendously difficult, because excuses, I mean, you know me, I have a whole podcast on excuses. You know, excuses are like every other limiting belief. They're no different from every other type of fear that keeps somebody from reaching that next level. You know, one of the things I think is really helpful for every single person is to realize that all of our emotions, and when you think about an excuse, if you can feel the emotion that comes from an excuse, it's almost like a pushback. Like if somebody says to you, gosh, you need to exercise more. And somebody starts to immediately push back. You can, and it's the excuses coming, the time.
I can feel myself being like, but I'm so busy.
Exactly. So that feeling, like, feelings are information. And so when you're working with a client, or when I'm working with a client, and you feel that excuse coming, it's such an opportunity. It's an opportunity for growth because you can say, what is that excuse about? Because for every excuse that people have, you in your work and me in my work could find 1,000 examples of people who are as busy as you and also work out, who are at home with coronavirus, homeschooling, and finding some time to write, who are posting and who are self-publishing and then get a deal after they self-publish. So we can come up. So it's not about hearing somebody's excuse and thinking, how do I tell them that that's not true? It's sort of like saying, gosh, you're in a space where that feels like it's not an option. Tell me about that. And that's I mean, kind of the whole process. Is what is an emotion? What information is it giving you? And, you know, is it real or is it fear?
So then when you say that you, even for this example, you know, you identified your values and your goals, how did you do that? And I guess the secondary related question is there then a secondary resistance of, now, like, it was already hard enough to get yourself, I mean, I know you love this, but a normal person doesn't love running 8 miles every Saturday. So is it hard enough to make the time to get in the clothes, to get to the trail, to run the 8 miles, to cool down, take a shower, all that. Now, I have to align my values and goals and work out a different time of day. So now it's twice as much work because of, again, quote unquote, these idiots. So is it, how do you go through that process, even figuring out the values and goals and the way around it?
So it all became clear to me with very small examples. So when I was working with clients and they were, a lot of people come to me because they want to be healthier psychologically and physically. People who have clear values and beliefs, like I really want to be healthier, to be fitter, to be skinnier. And then we look at, okay, well, how do you eat? How do you exercise? So if somebody values and admires people who do something and they do something else, you can just feel when there's incongruence, it doesn't feel right. If I'm like, oh my gosh, I love Gabby Reese. She's so fit. She's so gorgeous. She's smart. She eats this way. She exercises. She's motivational. But I'm going to sit on the couch and eat potato chips while I listen to her podcast. Like that's incongruent. So what's funny is, yes, it takes more energy. But I will tell you, it is very, it's energizing. So when I think to myself, now I'm going to overcome this obstacle and I get to feel, I'm not supposed to use any expletives, but I get to feel, I was going to say something that started with bad, but I get to feel powerful. I think that it's funny. People often complain about how much energy things take. And I am somebody now who embraces things that take extra energy. I mean, it just is one of those things where, you know, if you fear it, it seems like a bad thing. But honestly, if you've ever gotten up at sunrise and you thought, oh, I hate getting up early, but you're ever outside when the sun is rising and no one else is out there and you're on a trail, it is unbelievable. If you're out at sunset, you know, and there's an empty trail and you're listening to birds, it's unbelievable. You know, I think that if you are able to, in every single area of your life, decide, what do I want to be like? And then you do it, like you just tap into power potential that people don't realize they have. And anytime that you don't, because I have a couple areas of it in my life that I know where I want to be, like with sleep, but I don't want to take any medication. I want to have very specific bedtime. I want to get up early. But sometimes I end up staying up late and then I'll grab a Unisom because I don't want to get no sleep because I've got meetings and clients the next day. So that is an area for me. I'm still like, ugh, you know what power means. You got to do it. And it takes away something from my, you know, from my self-esteem or my soul or my core that I know how I want to be and I don't fully do it. So I try to have very few areas like that. So with writers, I would think that having a goal, now a goal during crisis is different than a regular goal, but outside of maybe this 2 month, 3 month period, like what do you think is the issue for writers right now that you're seeing?
I mean, it could be a lot of things. I mean, I've certainly heard people say, oh, you know, don't submit to agents because whatever, or, you know, even, you know, oh, does this topic even matter? Or they're not even putting a book out there. They're just out there. They're like, why? I shouldn't be posting social media because there's so much more important stuff. And I think a lot of it's the stuff that they always feel anyway. It's now heightened because there's so much trauma going on in the world, you know, that sort of thing. So this, and again, it's different for everyone. And sometimes it's just, well, now you get to really, really leverage that excuse. But other times, I mean, it's very real. Or, and I see this a lot, they're basing it on a fact. Oh, I read an article where a literary agent said, and it's like one thing, and I've read different articles, but they have it, and they just take that, and it's now a fact. I mean, we all see this in a lot of things with science and stuff. I read an article, and now I'm an expert.
Yeah.
But it's the idea of having a voice. It's the idea of trying.
But I think you have a very, every time I've been in that space with you of doubt or fear or worry or is this the right thing, I think one of the things you've helped me do over the course of the years is come back to the intention. That's a place of power for creators and writers, and is the why are you doing the work? And I know over the years you've constantly brought me back to that space, because the rest of it's kind of where you get stuck in the noise.
Yeah.
And and this is a time where I think we are all very stuck in noise.
Well, it's interesting here how you said before that you're actually embracing things that take more time. And it really flips it on its head, because it's the idea of really taking it on like a responsibility. And this is an area I have no idea how to reach into this topic, but I want to ask, because I don't know if you look at it a certain way or not. But, you know, the word victim, and that's a very complicated, very broad term, so I want to be really careful around that. But in terms of just the creative and writing space, I always wonder, does this broach into that? And an example could be, well, you know, my first book was orphaned. I was brought in, you know, I brought into the publisher, my editor left, publicist changed. So the people left at the publisher didn't care about my book. And I, therefore, the book didn't do well. And therefore, my whole career, I'm hobbled. So you bring up anything else and that always comes up. Or, oh yeah, I would, you know, for a crafter, you know, sure, I was early with Etsy, but then my spouse lost their job, or I did something where I took a break. By the time I resurfaced, everyone from back then, they're superstars. I missed my chance. Does that work into this as well? Or is that really like a separate topic?
No, it's the exact same topic. No, wow. I love that example. And I'll use an example I hear a lot, but it's the same thing. It's because you're not talking about victims, you know, a victim of a crime, a victim of something. That's different from, I think, what you're talking about, which is sort of that sense, that victim mentality. Something's been done to me. I'm the victim of these circumstances. When I switched from working with first responders and, you know, front lines of Columbine and all that to sort of stay at home moms, I saw a lot of that mentality where they're talking about, I want a divorce. My husband is really, he works all the time. He's not around for the kids. On the weekends, he just wants to golf. I'm sick of it. I feel like a single parent. I'm done. I think, you know, I would be much happier if he weren't in my life. And so you can see that the wife has become a victim of the husband. And it wasn't until I took an entirely different approach. This was really part of my learning curve. With a woman, I just basically said, well, look, he's not here. We're not doing couples therapy. Usually when there's a couples issue, you're working with the couple. She didn't want her husband to come in. And so I said, well, what's happening in your life? Like, tell me about life since marriage and kids. And she put on a bunch of weight, and she didn't really love her day-to-day with the kids. She was really bored because she was just an intellectually curious person who was like getting goldfish snacks during a lot of the day. And as we fixed each area of her life, as we got her in shape, as we decided that maybe she needed to work part-time for her intellect, as she got into hobbies like cooking, over the course of about a year and a half, she became really, really happy. And I remember then her saying, like, I don't even know why I was so mad at my husband. Wow. And here is the thing that I took from it. It's like she took back her power by fixing the things she was unhappy about instead of projecting them onto her husband. At the very end, she finally said, like, he works so hard because he loves his job, and he golfs because he's passionate about golf. And what I took from that was like, God, yeah, we all need to have a golf. It's not that we need to resent other people for their golf. We need to each have that thing that we love so much and look forward to doing and can't wait to engage in it. And then it takes away that desire to just blame other people. And so what that would look like specifically with the example you gave, you know, I don't exactly know, but you're right that it's a very powerless way of feeling like I missed the boat. The time is gone. My friends are successful. I'm not. I just think about how it would feel to live in that space. And I just wouldn't be comfortable.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it is so complicated and it's different for each person in a way too. I mean, of course, I always come to it from a point of empathy of thinking like, you know, with anyone, and this is like the quote I always use from Brené Brown, which is like, you know, people are just trying to get by. It's like we're working with what we have. We don't feel like we have enough. And then if on top of that, there's a specific point we can look at and say, I missed the boat. Well, then it's almost like, I don't know if it's an excuse or I don't know if it's just reality or whether, you know, it is worse to have almost had it and lost it or to never had it at all. Like it feels so psychologically complex, but that's why I love this whole idea of you taking that whole concept of taking back your power. And it wasn't by winning over other people. It wasn't you saying, so what I did was I got home and created a Facebook trying to shame the people on the hiking group, and that went viral. It wasn't changing them. It was actually looking inside you to change your own expectations, your own behavior. And in that was your power. And I just thought that was mind-blowing of what that could do for some people, given their situations.
I did fantasize about making t-shirts with really large messages on them. But once again, you can't get to that place where you decide to take an empowered stance until you recognize like, oh, I'm really angry. And my clients don't always love it. I mean, I hear this one conversation all the time, and I consider myself unbelievably blessed that my husband is neat and tidy. Because there's this fight that I hear, especially from young married people all the time about like, she wants us to clean the house. I'm happy to help clean the house. I really want to watch the game. Like, I'll clean the house later. And there gets to be this power struggle. And I always feel like, you know what? Take the power. If you want a really clean house, just clean the house. Mm-hmm. And then don't get resentful and angry about it. Just feel really great that you have the energy to clean a house, that you love your clean house, and that you made it happen, and just feel strength and do it. And I could just tell you, women look at me like, what are you talking about? I don't want to clean the house by myself. And I get that that's extreme, and I get that there are negotiations, and I don't want to, but I mean, this concept of if you identify that something is off, instead of blaming people and resenting and really just saying like, I have the power to fix this thing. So it just is a different way of approaching a problem. For me, it really works. I don't know that it would work for everybody.
No, it's a good point. You mentioned this too, where you kind of compared our work, and it's, you know, I have this mission where I believe in the power of creativity and in sharing that and what happens. And you likewise have the whole, you understand the power of health, whether it's mental health or physical health. And again, it is that standpoint of we've heard the excuses, and it's not that we don't have empathy or respect or understanding for them. It's that you've probably heard every excuse ever for why they can't work out. And yet, because of what you believe and your experience, you know, even though that's true, it's like, you know, and, you know, but we're still going to work on it anyway.
Right. Right. And there's this powerful tool sometimes to use with people where you go with the resistance. Like I'd be curious with your clients, you know, or with the people who come to you for advice and say, but we can't do it now, or I can't. To go, we call it like going with the resistance, where you just go, okay, so if nobody is submitting anything, like, what does that mean for you? And so, well, yeah. What do you want to do? Okay, so should we stop? And I think what I observe with most people is when you go with the excuse, when you lean into their excuse or their upset or their anger and resentment, that they will start to make an argument in the opposite direction, which is just really funny when you say, like, all right, then, you know, let's not do anything right now. Let's take a break. Let's regroup. What do you think? Like, when the virus is over, 2022, people would be like, what? No.
Well, yeah, I love that. I mean, the one thing I do is sort of use it. So, you know, there will be times where people say, oh, I really can't send a newsletter now because I have writer's block, or I'm worried that I'll be insensitive. And I'm like, oh, let's use that. The first line should be, I have writer's block. Or the first line should be, I'm nervous if I should be writing now during the pandemic. Like, let's lean into that. And even that whole idea that works with marketing as well, which is, you know, the whole idea of like, oh, I don't want to do an event about my book because whatever. It's like, okay, cool. Let's do the opposite of that. Or let's do an event for someone else. Forget about your book. Let's do an event for this other person's book. Like, because that's where you kind of unlock a lot of the fun, wacky things. And fun and wacky tends to work really well in marketing.
That's so true. Like just naming the truth. I love that you use that with people. It's such a powerful tool to say, okay, so what is your reality right now? You're unsure if you should write a newsletter. Write that. That is such a powerful thing to say, like, I'm totally lost as everybody else. This is actually in my private practice the first time. And if you think about it, as a treating psychologist, I am experiencing the same trauma, the same reality, the same weirdness that every single one of my patients is.
Yeah, that is interesting.
And so it's a bizarre parallel process where I'm like, I don't have to use as much empathy because I'm living it with you. Like, I get it. I cannot wait to miss my family. I get it.
Yeah, totally. So. Thank you so much for coming on today and chatting about this. I saw what you were sharing and it just sparked so many little things in my head that I just wanted to really cater this to the more kind of writing and creative audience.
So fun.
Thank you so much. I'll put all your links into all the show notes and everything. So I appreciate your taking the time to come on with such short notice.
Well, it was just such a pleasure. And you know, I love this topic. So anytime. Thanks, Dan.
You can find Shannon Connery in a whole bunch of places. For one, she has her own podcast called Fix Yourself, The Shannon Connery. Her most recent episode digs into this topic, which is called Finding Empowerment During a Crisis. You can listen to my first podcast with her, where we really dig into her story. And that episode is called Filling Your Life with Creativity After the Bottom Drops Out. You can also find her podcast, Fix Yourself. You can find her at shannonconnery.com. On Instagram, she is The Happiness Gain. On Twitter, she is S. Connery, PhD. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me on social media at Dan Blank or on my blog and website at wegrowmedia.com. Thank you so much for listening until the end.